Some of our voices are being silenced. The voices belong to those who advocate for ways to get and stay healthy without resorting to drugs. The loss of those voices leads us to ask, why are the voices of alternative health being silenced?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with your host, Michael Oldson. And now, get ready for 1 hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Yeah, What's Eating What? Hello out there. You are tuned into the 1,202nd edition of the Food Chain Radio Show. Or hey, perhaps you're among way down there in Fruitvale who are tuned in as the stream along in the Food Chain podcast at metrofarm.com. But whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio. Folks, you may not have noticed yet, but some of the nation's leading advocates of alternative health have lost their voice or are losing their voice. It even happened to me when I sent out a social media release of a show on bioterrorism I hosted featuring Georgetown University professor Hank Parker. Apparently, the word terror frightened the elite of social media because I quickly found that my social media voice had been silenced. Poof! Gone. Now, it's easy to understand how the elite could become frightened by the word terrorism, and so we give them that. But now we learn that they have become frightened by words like honey and are silencing the voices of those who use those words to speak of alternative health. So why are the voices of alternative health being silenced? Who's doing the silencing? And how are the voices being silenced? To find some answers, let's check in with a person who has been silenced and ask her. And she is Maryam Hanine, who is a journalist, a filmmaker, and a host of honeycolony.com. Maryam, welcome to the Food Chain.
Yes, hi. Thanks for having me. I'm very excited to talk about this and to be given a voice. I want to just clarify that Honey Colony is an online magazine and marketplace that was garnering about 500,000 unique visitors via its organic search key terms and well-researched, well-sourced, SEO-optimized articles, and that I am also a functional medicine consultant. So this movement, this stifling of natural remedies in favor of pharmaceuticals is nothing new. It's just reached new heights with the advent, well, because of what's happening today with big tech companies. Well, that perhaps, arguably, this has been a strategy in the making.
We have so much to explore, but I'd like to start with your Vanishing of the Bees.
Yes.
And it's a documentary you put together. Tell us a little bit about the Vanishing of the Bees.
So Vanishing of the Bees is, arguably a 10-year-old movie that... Usually, docs have a certain shelf life, but I tell people bees are still dying, so my movie is still alive. And it explores colony collapse disorder, which is a phenomenon. David Hackenberg was the poster child that kind of sounded the alarm. Mm-hmm. And it was found that this phenomenon was happening across the world. And upon 5 years of working on Vanishing of the Bees, we concluded that at the core of the demise are systemic pesticides made by companies such as Bayer, which is now part of Monsanto, and Syngenta. And these systemic pesticides are insidious in that they are not organophosphates where you spray them on the crops. They become part of the crops and then become systemic. And then the bees bring them back in the form of honey and pollen, and store them for future generations.
You know,
and
that
impacts, and
that word, yeah, systemic is very interesting with respect to pesticides. Because what systemic means, of course, is that it's throughout the entire plant system. So
yes,
every molecule is in fact infused with this poison. And there you are. So you have a situation where we're losing the bees. And we're still losing them, aren't we?
We are still losing the bees, and we are still losing other pollinators. We focus on the honeybees because, selfishly, they are the most useful to us because they pollinate one in every three bites of the food we eat. But the butterflies, the bats, the birds, the other native bees, now the coral reef is being messed up. I mean, these systemic pesticides are pervading our planet. They're killing worms. And it's important to also note that as they break down in the soil, the metabolites are more dangerous than the parent compounds.
Wow.
And in other parts of the country, in other parts of the world, rather, such as the EU, there have been provisional bans. And, you know, you argue that in France, the government is afraid of the people, although I don't know if that's still the case in 2019, but here, the people are afraid of the government, and arguably now the Environmental Protection Agency is arguably partially defunct.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you also argue that we are the bees. What do you mean by
yes.
We are the bees?
Yes, that's to me, if I'm paying ode to the fact that there's been a 10-year anniversary that coincided with the 50th anniversary of Silent Spring by Rachel Carson, who was sounding the alarm on DDT, and it's been found that systemic pesticides are more dangerous than DDT. I don't have the figures at 5 to 10,000 times more dangerous. So, yes, my message is that we are the bees slowly being poisoned by sublethal doses of given our food supply, our air, our water, our earth, it's all contaminated. And now the information that is being passed on to us via search engines like Google is also contaminated and processed and non-organic.
And there we go. You wrote an article that you sent to me. It was titled, "Big Tech Companies Like Google Declare War on Health Freedom." And I got this article, and I thought, oh, this is interesting, and I sent it to a Gmail address that was more convenient at the moment to type or to print the article out, because it's a substantial article, lots of stuff.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So I got the eventually got around to printing, and I printed it up, and I tucked it away, and I said, oh, boy, we get to interview this young lady, and I'm going to really look forward to reading her piece. But something strange happened when I printed this. I got an echo. Is that you?
Yeah.
Do you hear that echo as well?
Is it gone?
No. Yeah, it is now.
The echo is?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry.
Okay, no problem. So when I printed the article, the most interesting thing I've ever seen happened. It became cluttered with Google ads, overlaying your text. So trying to read your text, it was like dodging around these Google ads, and finally I had to go back to the internet, to the original link, to find it. So
I would really like, sorry to interrupt, but I would really like a screen, a grab of that to share with a Google whistleblower, Zach Voorhees.
Okay, I'm going to try to get that for you. But so what happened is I saw this incredible overlay, and I thought, gee, maybe she's right. Maybe they are out to get you. Do you think that...
Out to get me personally?
Yeah. Mm. Or out to get your article talking about Google. Do you think that...
Well, in this moment, yes, I think it's possible. You know, you have maybe cognitive, or I'll speak for myself, have cognitive dissonance, or don't want to be arrogant or say, who the hell am I? I'm just a small worker bee. But clearly, if I were to lay out the facts of what has happened over time, over these past 2 years, then, yeah, I think I'm on some list.
What makes you think that they are out to put, that they have put you on their bleep list?
Well, okay, I will take a moment to put things in context, and again, as a journalist, to just stick to the facts and let people decide, because that is best. You do not want to be dubbed in these times a conspiracy theorist or a zealot. They've become bad words. They've arguably always been bad words. So, one, my film explores systemic pesticides and calls out Bayer crop science. During the making of the film, I had someone who was the state entomologist for Florida tell me to watch my tires. Later was hired by Monsanto. So that kind of planted a seed, but I was quite naive then. So we talk about Bayer. I have been, as a biohacker, as an entrepreneur, offering solutions that arguably are ahead of their time. And one of them was CBD cannabinoids, which, you know, now everyone and their mother is making CBD, but we were offering it in 2015. If you go down that rabbit hole and you understand the politics of CBD and the challenges faced by entrepreneurs in the online space, you will discover that CBD was put on a Schedule 1 conveniently in 2016 as the strategy was in place to create this FDA-approved Epedilox created by GW Pharma. When it became FDA-approved, conveniently it was taken off of Schedule 1, falling under the purview of the FDA.
What is the Epedilox?
Epedilox, which I might be pronouncing incorrectly, is the synthetic fake CBD made by GW Pharma. If you look down deeper, GW Pharma has an exclusive marketing agreement with Bayer. So wow. I like to tell people that I share Bees and Bud in common with Bayer. Just putting it out there.
And there you go.
I can't prove anything. This is just, hey, by the way, just putting that out there. And then in 2017, I started feeling techno-fascism in regards to CBD, because we've been shut down by all the mainstream processors. And, you know, that led to me personally being banned from PayPal for life, although I never sold CBD personally on PayPal, scrubbed off of Kiva, scrubbed off of GoFundMe, so that if you go to those pages, it's like I never had an account. And I'm an activist that's used these platforms often. It's not the first time.
So you are feeling, just because you're paranoid does not mean they're not out to get you. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What. Today we're talking with Mary M. Heinen, who is a journalist, a filmmaker, a host of HoneyColony.com. And we're talking about what happens to the voices of alternative health, those people who advocate that we find other ways other than drugs to get healthy and stay healthy. When we come back, we're going to go look back and see where it all started. Do stay tuned.
Let's go back for more of What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
And Mary M. Heinen. Did I pronounce that correctly, Mary M.?
It's Heinen.
Heinen.
Like inane. Heinen. Like the word inane.
Heinen.
But Heinen.
Okay. Mary M. Heinen, who is a journalist, a filmmaker, and a host of HoneyColony.com. Mary M., you were talking a little bit about what has happened to you over the last few years with respect to your voice, the voice that you have on social media and throughout the internet.
Yeah, so initially it started with CBD, and I'm not the only entrepreneur who has experienced shutdowns by the mainstream processors, because they have allegiance to their financial backers, and the financial backers arguably have allegiance to Big Pharma. And I was just touching upon how it conveniently CBD fell under the purview of the FDA with the signing of the hemp bill, which is according to plan, because you can argue that CBD is now a drug. So it would be like akin, the analogy I give to putting Ativan in salad dressing. So that opens up a whole series of issues because there's a lot of crap out there in the CBD world. But nonetheless, we, our company, was feeling the wrath as far as being shut down, for instance, by Facebook, accused of putting together CBD ads, promoting CBD ads. So luckily, as a journalist, I've busted out my press pass many times to try to get justice. I've given interviews that have been taken off of Twitter, or that journalist who happens to also be an activist who's spoken vocally against Bayer was temporarily banned, videos taken off of YouTube about Superior, about our CBD brand, so on and so forth. So that kind of introduced me to what I dubbed or latched onto as techno-fascism, which I detail in the article. Mm-hmm. Then in 2018, we started seeing that our traffic was plummeting, and in marketing calls, scratching our heads as to what are we doing wrong from an SEO point of view, when we were ranking organically quite high on a handful of search key terms through our hard work and our content. And then slowly to learn that there was algorithmic change that Google, that became known as the Medic update, that penalized your money, your life type sites. Now, if you want me to...
Before we do, I'd like you to step back a little bit in time.
Yes.
And in order to make sense of all of this, on why, I think we should go back to 1910 and pick up the Flexner report. What was the Flexner report?
Yes, so I'm going to... So, like I was saying, the stifling of natural remedies in favor of peddling pharmaceuticals and monetizing money isn't new. So, arguably, we kind of gave over our rights to malign science and technology in 1910. So, Flexner, what's known as the Flexner Report, I'm reading passages from my piece. 52 years ago, someone named Abraham Flexner was hired by John D. Rockefeller to evaluate the effectiveness of therapies being taught by medical colleges and institutions, and the ultimate goal was dominating control over pharmaceuticals. So around that time, there were partnerships that were being forged between Andrew Carnegie, J.P. Morgan, and a new doorkeeper kind of emerged and influenced legislative bodies and controlled what information got to be presented. And this is really when kind of independent research has always struggled. It's kind of like a catch-22, right? We don't have the independent studies, but it's the system that creates the red tape to prevent the promotion of more independent studies.
And so this way back in 1910, the big boys, John D. Rockefeller, mm-hmm. Andrew Carnegie, and J.P. Morgan got together and formed partnerships by which they kind of established domination over the pharmaceutical industries. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, that is what the information that I have found has presented itself.
So there it is, going way back then. So now we have a world in which we have big pharma, we have big search technology companies, and we have big government. And they all seem to be working together, or am I missing something?
Well, in my opinion and in my research, it's big pharma that is monetizing or pulling the strings. They have a big role. They are embedded in Congress, lobbyists. The amount of money that big pharma spends on lobbyists, and now they are using big tech to further weed out information, suppress information, and censor. And so this update, you know, Google obviously has had many updates over the years, mm-hmm. and the
as they refine their search, they establish new algorithms, which are the instructions on how to search, right, and what to search for. And those algorithms.
Yeah, as they refine their search, I mean, refining their search as they modify their search based on the agendas behind the scenes, and then withholding more information and burying anything that challenges the status quo, the mainstream, when it comes to Western medicine and popping pills and injecting yourself with needles. And wow, what a novel concept that our body can heal itself by addressing nutritional deficiencies and making sure that we detox, because detox is a very big part of, like you were talking about in another show on autophagy. It's very important in this day and age to detox, and it goes beyond, like, it's not about a juice cleanse at all, because that's like sugar bombs.
That's right. Now, the problem with that, you know, with detoxing and eating right and all of that stuff, is that nobody's making any money on it. And Big Pharma needs a lot of money, because in 2016 alone, you write that Big Pharma invested $100 million in the 2016 election cycle in buying government. So if government is costing you $100 million, you got to figure out how to get a lot of money out of people. And $100 million?
I want to just say, when you state that no one's making money off of natural remedies, that Big Pharma's not making money off of natural remedies. Vitamins and natural remedies is a multi-billion dollar business.
That's true. But you're not.
Vitamins and supplements, in 2015, USA alone spent $21 billion on natural remedies. So it's also based on a scarcity model where there's not enough to go around. Like, how much is enough for these big pharmaceuticals that make billions of dollars on just vaccines alone?
Mm-hmm. Well, if you bring up vaccines, which is really where the rubber hits the road here, is it not?
Yeah, that's where we get in trouble with the B word.
That's where we're really facing up to a struggle between those who want to say one thing and those who don't want them to say that one thing. And that's where you're really seeing people being silenced, correct?
Yes, but let's go back and explain and set the context of these Google algorithms and what is the result, because certainly I share my story from the perspective of a journalist who's covering it, as an entrepreneur who's experiencing it, who has a website that's been deranked and shadow banned, and as a public figure, albeit small, that's wants to get their message out there to empower people to be their own best health advocate. Mm-hmm. And now we're living in a very polarized atmosphere. So these algorithmic changes.
You describe them. You describe them interestingly enough as persuasive technologies. In your article, I caught that term and I thought, that's very interesting. How could a search engine find its way to using persuasive technologies? What do you mean? What did you mean by that?
Well, we can use. Well, if you're, how do you shape reality? It's through perception. How do you form your perceptions? It's through the information that you're given. If information is being held from you, you're not seeing the full picture, hence your perspective is compromised, right?
Right.
So information is not accessible any longer. This also plays into a fascist climate.
Control.
And absolute control. So to answer your question of pervasiveness, so Google, that is arguably the biggest search engine, and
what,
that
what
we
share grew, what share of the search market does Google have?
I would have to ask an expert.
Okay,
we'd
probably have to Google that, right?
No, I wouldn't Google it. I would ask a Google whistleblower that's beside me.
Oh.
Zach, yes. What percentage of Google as a search engine, how much of a control it is, how popular is it? Would you say 90% of people? 90%.
So, okay. So, Lord, you also quote Lord Acton, who said, "All power corrupts, but absolute power corrupts absolutely." And 90% of the power is a significant amount of power for one company to have, is it not?
Absolutely. And people do not realize how pervasive Google is in their life. If people don't even know that Google is now a pharmaceutical company, I use Google Calendar, Google Docs, Gmail. There have all of our data. Now, to go back to the pervasiveness question, that originally there were popular organic searches, right? So if you were to do a search, what would accumulate or what you would see are the most popular search terms that people are looking for. So from a content provider, creator perspective, if I was writing a story, I would look at different tools and see what are some common search terms that jive with our mission, and then create a story around that. And that's how we would nab
organic searches.
Organic searches. So now there's no organic searches, arguably, and Google has called them, they're auto-suggestions. So as someone who minored in psychology, you can look it up that auto-suggestions is a simple yet arguably the most powerful mind control tool. It's very subtle. It's impacting your subconscious. We're run 96% by our subconscious. So that if you were to do a search now on, I'm hoping your audience knows Dr. Mercola, who is a reputable actual physician who predates Google, mm-hmm. whose traffic went down 90%. So if you were to do a search term for him today, what would come up is 9 reasons not to listen to Dr. Mercola, followed by Wikipedia. Wikipedia has arguably become a sidekick for Google, because they've put in at least $8 million in this online encyclopedia, and the people who are writing the wiki are not vetted, are not they're anonymous. So we are preferring anonymous, non-vetted contributors versus accredited professionals who are in the health and wellness space. And all we are talking about really is, like, let the people decide. Allow the information to be out there. Empower the human being to do their own research. But unfortunately, we have made a species that is lazy, that believes that just because someone is wearing a lab coat that they know what they're talking about. We've enlisted our trust. We swallow pills and take needles that end up making us sicker than ever.
And we believe in Google. In Google we trust.
Yeah, in Google we trust. And so at any point in this conversation, if you would want to speak to Zach Voorhees, then I could put him on, because he's here. And, you know, I speak about health freedom specifically, and as a journalist, definitely as an entrepreneur, have been deranked and buried. He's the one who has blown the whistle and worked for Google for 8.5 years.
Well, one question. Yeah, we're going to take a break here in a few minutes.
Yeah.
But when we do, I would like to ask Zach, what you said that Google has become a pharmaceutical business as well.
Well, yeah, he wouldn't. I've done more research in that realm than he has, as far as the link between the vaccine companies and such. Mm-hmm. But I just want to establish again, auto-suggestions.
Okay.
So again, because I say, you know, you can try this at home, boys and girls, put in supplements R, and you will see that the results are negative. They're dangerous. They are not FDA approved.
Okay, so what Mariam is saying is,
yes,
go to your Google search, type in, yes, the words supplements are, and then hit enter and see what pops up.
Correct.
And what pops up will be an auto suggestion, which is Google telling us how to think, right?
Absolutely. They have since, in the past couple of weeks, sprinkled in a couple of more positive results, which I've seen the difference because I've been monitoring it. What's interesting is that Google, and that's in the story as well, does not call it auto-suggestions. It's very common in these fascist 1984-like times where we change, we vaporize information, we rewrite history, we change words.
Hold that for a second when we're going to take a quick break. You want to bring Zach on? I'm all for it. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What with Maryam Hanine. Hanine. There you go.
Hanine.
Right back. Stay tuned.
So much to say, so little time to say it, on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
And Maryam Hanine, who is a journalist, a filmmaker, a host of honeycolony.com, and she is one of the people who has been losing her voice as the search giants zero in on her activities. They seem to think that she is a highly suspect person because she advocates for alternative forms of medicine. She says that we can take care of ourselves, and that's not something evidently that Google or any of the big tech or the big pharma or the big government people want to hear anybody saying anymore. Is that right?
Basically, if you consider the amount of money that big pharma is putting into Google, so if you want to take a step back and describe some of the collaborations, Google's parent company is Alphabet. Alphabet owns a pharmaceutical, several subsidiaries. So, for instance, in 2013, Google founded Calico, and that was run by Arthur Levinson, who's a former CEO of the biotech corp Genentech, which is a subsidiary of Roche. And their mission is to understand the biology that controls lifespan. Then Alphabet also founded Verily Life Sciences. Now, these pharma companies I describe are partnering with each other, with others, and then they're having babies of their own. And then it's known that GlaxoSmithKline created, joined with Verily, and that invested $715 million. So we've established this kind of, look it up. It's well-sourced in the article. And then 2016 had partnered with Sanofi, Verily partnered with Sanofi. But to me, the big, like, oh my goodness moment was when I found out that GV, which is the venture capital arm of Google's parent company, Alphabet, invested in a company called Vaccitech. So now we're entering the V word. So this company's out of Oxford, and when I read that they are working on the future of mass vaccine production, so to create a one-size-fits-all vaccine for the flu for just starters. Now, if you consider that you, Michael, are a completely different constitution and biome than me, I speak from a functional medicine point of view, which is very personalized. Your constitution is different than mine. If you have a one-size-fits flu where you're kind of guessing because the flu changes, the strains change every day, and the facts show that the flu vaccine is the most dangerous of all the vaccines. So that for me really was like, I get it now, because I kept on scratching my head. You know, I've been in the health and wellness space for a really long time, and certainly the vaccine debate with the advent of movies like Vaxxed and others that have come out to present the information, this has been a topic that's been discussed. Why is it now so taboo? And then finding out that, oh, this is the decade of vaccines. I didn't know that. Did you know that?
No. But it seems to be so.
Yes. And so then the World Health Organization conveniently in January established that anyone who was anti-vax wouldn't vaccinate their children is presenting as a global threat. Now, this is very nuanced. And I'm not one to throw the baby out with the bathwater. But first and foremost, I stand for sovereignty and freedom of choice. And if you look that back in the day around when I was growing up, there were 23 doses of 7 vaccines. And now currently there's 69 doses of 16 vaccines, and 50 of them are given before the age of 6. But then you learn that the future that we are heading towards is mandatory vaccines for adults. And that's when I write mic drop, because I do not want to be stuck with anything. If you want to be stuck with a vaccine, go for it. And arguably, if you are vaccinated, then you're inoculated against us who choose not to get vaccinated. But
so what's the problem? Kind of put things, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You know, you brought up two interesting facts that really stopped me in my tracks. One of which was that Big Pharma they are immune. There is no accountability for their vaccines.
Shenanigans.
They can put anything in those vaccines and put it into your body, and they are not accountable. That's fact number one.
Correct.
Big Search is also not accountable either. Big Search claims that they are a platform under...
You mean Big Tech?
Big Tech, yeah. Big Tech, yeah.
Yes.
They are immune from any kind of problems. They can say whatever they want or get rid of whatever they want under Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act. And yet they are acting as publishers and making decisions about content. So both of these, Big Pharma and Big Tech, have been granted immunity by the federal government.
Yeah. Well, when it comes to Big Tech and immunity, I think now the government is being involved in these antitrust probes, and you can also argue, do you want the government to be the one regulating? Why can't we go back to the old days where, you know, the mantra was to not do evil for Google, and just to alert the people that they are being manipulated.
So what happened to do no evil?
It was removed, and that's a question that Zach could respond, having been an employee, and I focusing on the health on the health angle. But you can argue that, well, the internet was created, the World Wide Web, to invite community and connection and sharing of information in a free democratic way, and now we're living in fascist times where the information, and again, it's all areas, but I am focusing in health freedom. And I believe, you know, where are you without your health? And if you're going to have needles and pills stuck in you, the FDA is often referred to as the medical mafia. They certainly have blood on their hands from their FDA prescribed drugs. So, and yet they are attacking accredited professionals that are posing a more natural means.
You seem to be saying that there has been a fundamental transformation of the World Wide Web, wherein when it began, it, you know, the search engines would find everything they possibly could for you and say, here, you're looking for information about vaccines. Here's all the information. And you were free to go through it and read and discover what you could. But now there seems to be a situation where we're going to allow you to read this information, but not that information.
And so, for instance, yes, absolutely correct. For instance, if you don't, let's say you don't know honeycolony.com, you're not going to know, and you're looking on a story on mitochondrial dysfunction, for instance, or something simpler as autoimmune disease and ways to naturally reverse an autoimmune. If you don't know to put honeycolony.com or other sites that I'll mention, mercola.com, selfhacked.com, greenmedinfo, and you even forget the .com, you're not going to get the same results. You can go to Google, and you can go to another search engine like quant, because some of them I've been told, and I'm still researching, like DuckDuckGo is still adopting or reflecting a Google search algorithm. I don't know about DuckDuckGo, because what you end up doing, if you're looking for the truth and you're a truth seeker or you're really trying to find the information, and we've become too reliant on the internet for, which is a part of techno-fascist tactics, you will see the disparities between like doing a search on DuckDuckGo or Ecosia on Quant and then Google. So now you have to use maybe multiple search engines. And the goal, hopefully, is to bring the Google to be accountable. And that's why Zach has, you know, leaked 950 pages of information and established also that there are blacklists. Because of course you think like, am I paranoid? Is this happening? Why is our traffic going down 40%? And then you speak to others in the space, people who are, you know, vaccines has never been my personal beat or area of expertise. But I'll give you a little story that I was writing for a mainstream magazine about CBD with the hopes that they would publish it because it's very difficult to penetrate the mainstream. And the editor asked me what my personal views were on vaccines, which has never happened in my career that we're talking about X and then you ask me about Y. And it's a perfect example of how polarized, and it's part of the system of divide and conquer, to keep the control. And I believe in that people should have access and like, again, have the people choose what they'd like to do with their body.
You speak a lot of fascism. And, you know, what do you mean by fascism?
Well, I talk about techno-fascism. And, I mean, it's interesting. I'm reading a book currently called How Fascism Works. And maybe it's not 100% accurate, or it too has its biases. And I'm not a political expert. So I was describing initially the things that were happening with CBD to our CIO, and he's like, that's techno-fascist. That's techno-fascism. And I kind of latched onto the term, and then when I was doing my research, found that author, now deceased, wrote about techno-fascism in, you know, just 4 years ago about facial recognition technology. Mm-hmm. And so if I may, one, I had to spell the fascism wrong in my story because I was told that it's a trigger word.
Oh, and, so that would be like...
It could get deranked.
Yeah, that would be like my mentioning terrorism when I did a radio show on food terrorism. So what you have to do is misspell it so that the algorithm doesn't pick it up. You know, what happened to Dr. Mercola? Because I know a lot of people really have a lot of respect for his views.
Yes, I will get to him in a second. Let me describe what techno-fascism is. So Chet Bowers, who's a deceased author and lecturer and environmental activist, as I consider myself to be, described techno-fascism as, quote, an increased reliance upon computer-mediated learning at all levels of education to spur conformity of thinking. Uh-huh. So here we are bumbling along, thinking that Google is the greatest thing ever, and making it, you know, minting it into a verb and submerging ourselves in the culture and reveling in Googling. And then finding out that in reality, the bigger agenda is to increase our reliance overall just on finding information. You're not going to, I'm studying functional medicine. Functional medicine is the future. You're not going to go to the library downtown and find stuff on functional medicine. There's a reliance on the internet. So there needs to be, for techno-fascism to operate seamlessly, Bowers says, quote, there needs to be a significant percentage of the population that is hyper-patriotic, thinks in cliches, and is willing to support the use of imprisonment, and imprisonment doesn't need to be physical, and torture of those who challenge the rise of technofascism, especially those labeled as environmentalists.
There you go.
So those would again, for the people out there that are perpetuating the mainstream story, it's the people that are really challenging big pharma and asking you to question yourselves and being quote-unquote controversial.
Like?
And there are graphs in my story. So to
like let's talk about Mercola.
Like Mariam Hanane, yes.
Name.
But let's say look at Dr. Mercola.
Okay.
You know, he's again an actual physician, predates Google, arguably has a way larger following than Honey Colony, for instance. He supported Vanishing of the Bees. I am friendly with his partner, Erin Elizabeth of Health Nut News, who has been very vocal about vaccines, very vocal about the 80 plus doctors that have died in a short time span, all like quote unquote committed suicide. So he was at a biohacking conference hosted by Dave Asprey.
Go ahead.
Should I stop?
Okay, no, go ahead. We have a minute left.
I got to speak with him. He really liked the term technofascism. He spoke to hundreds of people and encouraged everybody to boycott Google and has seen 90% of his traffic plummet.
90% of his traffic plummeted. There you go, folks. This has been the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What with Mariam Hanane. Did I get that right this time?
Yes.
There you go. Mariam,
thank
you so much for joining us. And Honeycomb or honeycolony.com. Honeycolony.com. Thank you for joining us, Mariam.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with Michael Olson. And if your friends missed the show, tell them to log on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with its farmer's face on it and live.